Welcome to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. For the next hour, we'll be your local real estate news magazine. I am Mark Schneidman, your local realtor since 1988 with Coldwell Banker, Santa Barbara resident since 1977. I'm here with talent on loan from the California Department of Real Estate. As usual, for the fourth segment, the weekly multiple listing update. Now we track median home price sales weekly and year to date, current active inventory, all compared to last year's numbers. And we'll be looking at, again, the six-month period, the first 6 months of the year of 2006, and both six-month periods for 2005. We broke those numbers down. We've been reviewing those numbers for the past couple of weeks, so we'll review that as well. Our phone number, 564-1290, 564-1290. Go to RadioRealEstate.com. RadioRealEstate.com. You can listen to past programs for the last year. Archive the last 12 months of programs. Search for real estate information, real estate listings throughout California. Or after the program, you can always catch me at 452-2428, 452-CHAT. So I read a newspaper article last week written by Robert Brugman. He's a professor of architecture and urban planning at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And he began with this. Sprawl is not the worst thing that ever happened to nation cities. And I knew I would enjoy what was going to be said, not because I'm pro-sprawl or anti-mass transit, but we're always hearing from the pro-density, smart growth, anti-automobile, anti-freeway expansion crowd. And I just thought that this article would be a little bit different. So in an effort to highlight various points of view, present them fairly, we have joining us with today the author of a book, Sprawl, A Compact History, Robert Brugman. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Robert Brugman.
Very happy to be with you.
Where are you today? What state?
I am in Ohio, Ravenna, Ohio.
We had a fellow print an article in the local Santa Barbara News Press paper from Ohio. It was talking about using a slide rule and calculators to tell us why houses are overpriced in Santa Barbara and many cities. He might be from your university. I don't know.
Well, not if he's from Ohio, because I'm from Chicago, but I happen to be out here today.
I'll keep it straight. Geography was not my strong point. So, your book, Sprawl, A Compact History, we talked a little bit last week, Robert and I did, and most people, you talk about sprawl, and many people point to the freeways and the highways as the cause of urban sprawl, but you mentioned the railroad. Can you give us a little history?
Yeah, I think that the idea that somehow a particular transportation type can cause a particular land settlement pattern is a little simple-minded, and I think you can see that most easily in Southern California, where if you look at Los Angeles, Los Angeles became the most loosely organized, the lowest density, large urban area that the world had ever seen already by 1900, long before the automobile. And what's even more interesting is that since 1950, it's become much denser. It's become a third more dense since 1950, the Los Angeles urbanized area, with primarily the automobile. So although it's true that most sprawl has occurred during the years of the automobile, certainly the railroad was just as much a cause of urban sprawl and urban deconcentration as the car. And you can also see that the car can operate even in quite high densities. So trying to equate the two, I think, is really a mistake.
Yeah, it's an interesting. You just never think of the railroad as causing urban sprawl. You know, with L.A. So you mentioned two segments. 1900, they were leading the world in sprawl, and now they're leading the world in density.
Well,
at least in 1950, you said they switched.
Leading North America, anyway. In 1950, the L.A. urbanized area, and that means the city of Los Angeles and all the areas around it that were at least of suburban density, was maybe 4,000 people per square mile. That's gone up to over 7,000 people per square mile. At that rate, it means that L.A. has pulled ahead of Toronto and San Francisco as the densest urbanized area in North America. Now, it's much, much less dense than, let's say, Hong Kong, but it's actually a density that's very similar to Hamburg or many of the European cities, urbanized areas.
I bet you'd stump a lot of people if you asked them which city was more dense, L.A. or San Francisco, and the answer would be L.A. That would shock a lot of people.
Well, the reason is most people, when they think of cities, have a tourist eye view. They think of the central core. So if you're in Manhattan and you're on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, you can find densities of 100,000 people per square mile, but only for a very, very small area. Then you get out beyond New York City and you get into the suburbs, and then you get in the lower density around that, and you find that overall the density is not very high, maybe 5,000 people per square mile. With many of the cities in the American South and West, what you have is you have a relatively low density at the center by comparison with historical cities, but that density gets scarcely any less dense at the very edge of the city. So a city like Phoenix, an urban area like Phoenix, has the lowest, flattest density gradient, meaning the density at the center compared to the density at the edge, has the flattest density gradient of any large city the world has ever seen. And the result of that is that land prices at the very edge of Phoenix area are very similar to land prices at the very center.
That's interesting. And what is the upshot of that? I mean, it seems to be a very desirable area. People like it.
Well, I'm not in the business of trying to say what's good and what's bad. I'm only trying to, with this sprawl, I'm only trying to show that it's not necessarily bad. So I think the conclusion we can draw from this is that cities in the 19th century, the big industrial cities, had to be built in a certain way. They had to be very dense because it was important to have a close, tight connection between the various industrial concerns. And most of the people that had to get to work, the working class people that had to get to work, they pretty much had to walk. And so those cities were very high in density. But that may have been an aberration. It may be that the big industrial city of the 19th century, we haven't built any of those since the 19th century. All our cities today, if they're having most of their growth in the post-war era, look more like Phoenix than they do like, let's say, New York or London. So it could be that we're right in front of our eyes, we have a new urban pattern, which is Phoenix or Houston or Los Angeles, and we're not really seeing it because we're so used to comparing everything to these old cities of the 19th century.
And particularly, the cities that I'm thinking of is I grew up just in the outskirts of Manhattan, maybe 20 miles north of Manhattan. And the train system, the subway system, the mass transit there is so dense and extensive, and it works. You came out here, and it doesn't even exist virtually until recently. I guess they put in some underground. Is that something that... I don't know why didn't they replicate that when L.A. evolved?
I think that it only works when you have two conditions. You have overall high density and you have very good concentration of jobs, and then it's easy to get to the station on the other end of it. So for the big industrial cities, that system worked during the 19th century, the early 20th century. As soon as people got cars, they were no longer willing to do that because it's actually, in many cases, a very inefficient means of getting around. So in the Paris region, for example, we think of Parisians as using the subway and using buses. But in fact, it's only a quarter of the Parisians that use those, and that's only for people to get down to the center of Paris. And it's very easy to see why, because if you look at the figures for how long it takes, an average commute in the Paris region is something like 26 minutes by car. The average commute in the Paris region by transit is 57 minutes. So except to the core of very, very dense places, and that in the United States means New York, Chicago, a little bit maybe San Francisco. Other than that, it's almost always much quicker to get where you want to go from point A to point B by using automobile than it is by transit. And in the process, you gain a lot of flexibility and comfort of ride and so on.
Talking with Robert Brugman, author of Sprawl, A Compact History. you threw out the figure for New York, Manhattan, I suppose, 100,000 people per square mile. Is that?
Only for a few blocks on the Upper East Side.
That exists.
The city of Manhattan as a whole is on the order of 13,000 people per square mile.
Now, when you say the city, is that you're talking about all five boroughs?
All five boroughs. And that figure is important because really there's a threshold of maybe 10,000 people per square mile that you need to support a really extensive transit system,
mm-hmm.
and very few places in the United States really have that kind of density.
Interesting. I wonder, you probably wouldn't know what Santa Barbara is. I wonder how I could find out.
Well, I don't offhand. The way you find out is you go to the census, and under the urbanized areas section, there will be a tabulation of all the urbanized areas in the United States. I would imagine that Santa Barbara is quite low because it's relatively affluent. By and large, as a general rule of thumb, cities worldwide, the more affluent they are, the more people demand square footage, both inside the house and square footage generally. So I think that's why the average of really big cities, the urbanized areas in the 19th century, was 50, 100,000 people per square mile, and it's why it's fallen all around the world. And this is not just United States cities. This is all the cities of Europe, every large affluent city with the exception of maybe Hong Kong, which is still very high density. They've all, just those figures of density have just plummeted over the last 50 years.
Well, what's happening here locally in Santa Barbara is that there's a force to create more density within
right.
the downtown corridor to probably assist in making mass transit work, because you said you need the certain density to make it work. Relatively speaking, no matter how much density we add, we'll probably not come close to becoming what would be known as a high-dense city, you know, in comparison. But that's
probably
the political flavor here.
Yeah, and there are places where even if the city is relatively low density, it makes sense to take transit. Very often from the city center to an airport makes sense because these are both very high concentrations of employees, but also because there's a particular need to be able to have fast, reliable service to airports. But generally speaking, transit as a share of all trips has declined everywhere around the world, and it is declining very fast in European cities, even faster than it is in the United States, where only a few cities, really Chicago and New York, are really the only ones that have a massive transportation system, so you really can get pretty much around the whole center of the city.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it works like a dream, and I love the mass transit there, but it's just not happening here. One thing that's going on is we have a railroad station, and there's not great rail service really coming up and down the coast.
Right.
But we have a downtown railroad station, and the city bus station, city mass transit bus station, and the Greyhound bus station is located, maybe 10, 12 blocks away. And they're talking about, should they rebuild the bus transit hub where it is, or bring it down to the railroad station, and they're trying to decide that right now.
Yeah, it's quite possible that if you could bring those together, and you got and you really did push for better service, better rail service, that you could create some nodes of transit that would attract much higher densities, and that could be very beneficial for everybody around the country in the suburbs around Washington. Around San Francisco, for that matter, you do have some fairly high-density employment nodes, and for many people, that's very desirable, either to work or to live, if they find that they can be close to the transit and both sides of the equation. For them, that could be an ideal situation. So I think that one of the problems with this whole debate about sprawl is it's pitted private versus public, automobile versus train, and I think that the important thing to keep in mind is that what we really need to do is increase mobility, and we just have not been spending enough money doing that, and I think as a consequence, American cities are starting to lose competitive edge compared to places like cities in Europe or Asia, where they are spending that money and they are creating a 21st century transportation system.
We're going to take a break, Robert. We'll come back. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, talking with Robert Brugman, author of Sprawl, A Compact History. He's an architecture and urban planning professor at the University of Illinois in Chicago. not Ohio. Don't confuse him with the guy in Ohio. You stay tuned. We'll be right back.